We're doing our business background with Cameron and Lisa Renner, who recently purchased Harrison K. Liquors. Why, Cameron? Most people, you know, they have a passion about something associated with whatever it is that right. they're doing. Why a liquor store?
It kind of fell into my lap a little bit. When Dad sold the business, Dad sold Renner Petroleum, and I stayed on at Renner Petroleum for a number of years to help that transition. And as I was working there, I actually was working with a number of individuals that owned liquor stores and gas stations as I was selling them fuel. And one day, I actually approached the individual that owned the J&W Liquors in Ferndale and said, "Hey, you know, I know that you wouldn't mind selling me, I live in Ferndale, so I know you wouldn't mind selling me the liquor store there. It might be kind of fun to do. I live in Ferndale." And he's kind of looked at me and said, "Hey, no problem. I got my books right here. Here you go." So it was that simple. So I got to take a look at the books, made the determination that it was a good little business. My wife, Lisa, who owned Ferndale Clothing Company at the time, we thought, "Oh, this will be great. We'll be right next to each other and we'll get to work together every day." And what ended up happening was I bought Ferndale Liquors, ended up leaving Renner Petroleum, and at that same time, Jim Pastore was ready to focus solely on Old Growth Cellars. So at that point in time, he asked if I would be interested in buying the business. I said, "Oh yeah, absolutely, I can handle both." And it's been a lot of hard work doing both, but between my wife and I, we've been able to really do a lot of good things at all of the stores. So Lisa's Ferndale Clothing Company has been doing well, not so well on the retail side of life because of
some
the pandemic.
Challenges.
Yeah, that's been very, very challenging. But the two stores, Ferndale Liquors and Harrison K, have been doing very well. And I feel grateful that the Pastore family, they owned that store since 1962. I believe it was 1962. And it's just it's a really pleasant atmosphere in there. You know, it's a very family-oriented store. You know, it's that old Italian feel to it. You know, you come into the doors and you're part of the family. And
well, there are not a lot of those types of businesses. I mean, when we talk about small business, it's interesting for me in the radio industry, mm-hmm. you know, small market. Well, small market is defined as about under 1 million people. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I don't know what we are around here. Micro is kind of what I call it. I mean, the itty-bitty just sounds too pejorative, right?
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about small businesses, you know, 5 or less employees, under 10 employees, mm-hmm. it's really a different dynamic than what you run into at a different level. You know, you guys are kind of in the same boat, whether it's with the clothing side or whether it's on the liquor store mm-hmm. side as we are. Itty-bitties, you know, somebody's out sick, it ripples through everybody.
Oh, yes.
You know, it's just a different kind of strata. Were you ready for it? That what itty bitty really means?
No, but I was not prepared at all. But the family piece of it has been critical. It has been for me, for my soul. I needed that. You know, having people come in and wanting to know, "Who's the new owner? Where's he at? You know, I want to shake your hand. Okay, I'm going to be coming in here. I love coming into a little store." And
the eyeball to eyeball, supporting the small guy.
Yes.
And actually seeing the guy that you're
yes.
supporting. Yeah, that's a big deal. Yeah. I'm sure, Lisa, you run into that in the clothing store, too.
Yes,
I do. You know, it's they want to know who it is.
Yeah.
And touch and feel kind of thing. Yeah.
And I can honestly say, every dollar that is spent at the store, it stays in Humboldt County. I mean, we're not... You know, we're not doing insurance or banking out of the area. It all stays, you know, it stays here to an extent, of course, you know.
Yeah, I don't think Jack Daniel's manufacturing facility.
Exactly.
Yeah. Eventually it will disappear. But, yeah, I mean, you have as much as you can local. And that,
yeah.
I think there's I think folks with the current environment that exists are understanding that.
Yeah.
You know, particularly with the economic challenges that are going on. Mm-hmm. And there is a difference. Yeah, the Amazon guys are still doing what the Amazon guys are doing. Mm-hmm. But if it's somebody who's locally owned and local, it's different than being transacting with somebody who's local, which is still good, but not as good. And then you got the guys out of the area that, you know, it's a whole different situation. Multiple locations.
Yes.
We had it for 15 years with the stations in Brookings and then down here. Two different cultures.
Yes.
Two different experiences. As hard as you try to mush and blend and squeeze and doesn't happen.
Yes.
Are you running into something similar to that, or are both kind of operating on the same basis, but there's a little difference to Ferndale than there is to Eureka?
Oh, I had no idea how, you know, I grew up in Eureka, but all my family's from Fortuna and Ferndale. So I had no idea really how different the three communities are. I mean, you can go from one end of Humboldt County to the next, and it's just very, very different. And especially, now here's what's interesting for me, owning a liquor store, especially in what people drink. I never would have thought there's such distinct differences. I can have one product in Ferndale that will sell great. I can take that same product and try to sell it at the store in Eureka, and it is a dog, and vice versa. So it's really, that to me was shocking, because I had no idea, you know, these distinct differences in communities and what people like to drink, you know, as far as, do they like Canadian whiskeys, or do they care for bourbon? Do they like...
Well, I bet you probably run into that even with beers.
Oh, yes.
You know, just the different, you know, Budweiser smokes over here, and this is a craft beer. Yeah. Or this craft beer versus that craft beer. That it just, for whatever reason.
You know, what is interesting, too, though, is there is, in Humboldt County, I do see a lot of the people of this county that do want to support the local breweries, the local distilleries, the local wineries. And that, to me, is really cool. Is it more money than, you know, these giant breweries, you know, from Colorado or wherever? Yes.
Gee, I wonder which one that was. Huh. Starts with Adolf?
Okay. Yeah. So there are, you know, it's a distinct difference in price, but I think people, you know, they want to support their community. I think that they really do. Jim Pastore is a great example. You know, I think people really want to support him.
Well, and Barb with Lost Coast. I mean, when you know the people, know the people. And it's kind of the same thing you were referencing earlier about supporting the stores. Or and, you know, we, I guess, to a certain extent, experience it here as well.
And then seeing the difference, too, Old Growth and Fieldbrook cellars seem to sell very well in Eureka. Now I go down to Ferndale, and Francis Brazil's winery, Frog Alley, does very well down there because it's made right there.
Well, that's because it's not being presented by a crusader. Come on.
That is something
you lost that one entirely, huh?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I still get a lot of
folks. Be sure you fly the right colors, baby.
Oh, yeah. Coach, Coach still comes in to the store there in Ferndale, Coach Jorgensen, and he still gives me a hard time about it. I understand. That's okay.
But that's part of local.
Yes,
The fun, the joshing, I guess, to use a 50s word.
Yeah.
I think that's part of what sets us apart, you know, because we are so geographically isolated from anything people would call civilization. Yeah. We got to kind of hunker down all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of the special. I mean, to me, that's the same thing as the Redwood Trees.
Yeah.
That's what makes us, you know, being able to have fun and not get too serious about too many things.
Yeah. Being a graduate from St. Bernard's and then being in a Ferndale town, that rivalry, oh gosh, it is deep. And it is a great rivalry. And it's one of those things, though, that it's like brothers. I've discovered it's very much like brothers. It's okay for the Crusader and the Wildcat to give each other a hard time, but the minute somebody else comes in and tries to give the other one a hard time, yeah, they're the first ones there
to defend.
Yeah. To have your back.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is really cool. Really cool.
Yeah. We had Winston went through Eureka High and Stephen went through SB.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So there was another type of dynamic. I'm sure, yeah. You know, Ferndale Fortuna, it's got to be something comparable as well.
Yeah.
You just got, yeah, okay, but we're still here.
Yes.
You know, and I may beat you, you may beat me, but let's go out and kick butt outside the area.
That's right.
And that's kind of that thought process. So when you were looking at the liquor stores, mm-hmm. was it just a bottom line thing? Or
no.
Is it something that, you know, they talk about people wanting to be mentors.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Your dad obviously was one that helped out and mm-hmm. some of the family members. Now, if somebody else was looking at buying a liquor store, mm-hmm. let's say Arcata McKinleyville, so you don't have the direct conflict, mm-hmm. what would you tell them?
I would say be prepared to be a critical part of the community. That's something else I didn't really understand. The neighborhood, the connection to the neighborhood, it's almost like you become a counselor. You become, a mentor. I think that's another good word. I think it is kind of a business that's the glue for a given neighborhood. I had no idea. I didn't understand that.
Well, and neighborhood convenience store, neighborhood grocery store, neighborhood, all that kind of stuff.
And particularly with COVID-19 doing what it has done and shutting down bars, shutting down restaurants, the store has just become a place where people come in. It potentially is their one social interaction with people in a given day. And it becomes, now the clerks, we're sitting behind the counter there, we now have become their bartender. So we also are having to give advice. We're telling people, hey, we've heard this, we've heard that, you know, whether it's true or not, you know, we get to hear all kinds of interesting
stuff. I'm flashing
stuff.
Back to the 1930s, right? And the mm-hmm. old radio serials, you know, the Lemon Wagon and Abner and that kind of stuff. Pot belly, Franklin stove, wood floor, right?
Yeah,
stuff
right.
on the outside. And it's a gathering place for the community. And I sense that a lot of small stores are kind of becoming that way.
Absolutely.
Which is kind of cool because then when everything gets whatever the next level of normal is, those relationships are now forged in steel.
Absolutely.
And will exist down the road. So you might have to expand your floor space to put in some chairs.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure.
So how does a small store compete against either the big boy food store chains or those that are just selling booze only? Is it the relationship building?
100%. It's the relationship built with that customer, and the specialty items. You know, if somebody comes in to Harrison K, somebody comes in to Ferndale Liquor, somebody comes in to Ferndale Clothing Company, they should have an experience like no other. They should feel like they're part of the family. They should feel like, because it's not just about the money when they're going to come into a store like mine or Lisa's. It's just, it can't be, because we don't buy in these gigantic quantities that these big corporations can buy in. So we have to be as competitive as we can be, but give the customer an experience like he will never be able to have at a big box store.
Parallel to like restaurants, when you go in and they say, hi guys, nice to see you. Are you looking for something special or is it this? And they know you.
Mm-hmm.
And they remember and they just engage. Can it be that way with a commodity?
Absolutely, yeah. I think that, a commodity like wine, you know,
a bottle of wine's a bottle of wine, right? I mean, same.
I mean, in theory.
Let's use Angie's favorite, right? Okay, the OG experience. Boom, there it is.
Yeah.
You got it.
Mm-hmm.
They got it.
Right.
Okay. There it is.
Yeah.
But it's the experience.
Exactly. You know, are you going to be able to come into that store? Maybe you're paying a little bit more money. But are you going to be able to come into that store, have the clerk know who you are, point you in the right direction, quick, convenient, clean. You know, it's kind of a chore to walk into some of those big stores. It can be tough.
and the quarter mile walk.
Don't worry. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yeah.
So because both of you are running independent small businesses, Lisa, what have you learned from Cameron's experience?
Well, definitely getting more involved with the community and interacting with our locals. He's taught me a lot with, you know, just business-wise. I had no idea how to run a business when I took on Ferndale Clothing. And thankfully, I had Karen Pingator to help.
Yeah, Karen was one that kind of set the bar a little high.
Yes, she did. Yes, she did. And at times I feel too high, but I'm trying my best. And you're making me nervous by putting this in my face.
Yeah, we want to be able to hear you.
Okay. Sometimes, again, a little too high, but I feel, you know, with the guidance of her and Cameron, I think I'm doing okay.
She's doing better.
What about the other way? You know, were there lessons that Lisa learned that were applicable for your businesses?
Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you would think booze and clothes, what do they have in common? But they
they're our favorite things.
Yeah, they're our favorite. Yeah. And she likes to put on clothes. I like
as
to drink.
Say,
yeah.
You need both.
Yeah. No, but it's, yes, watching her and her interaction with her customer base. She does, she has a, I don't know what to call it, basically a customer loyalty program, I would say, that is, I would like to replicate that in the booze business, and I haven't been able to do that yet, but I would like to be able to do that. She has a following of women that do come in, and she reaches out to them. She keeps that those doors open, that communication open, and that's something I've learned that is critical. The customer loyalty, I don't want to call it a program because that makes it sound very sterile. Because it's not like, it's not a program.
It's a relationship.
I would say it's the relationship program that she has built, the relationships that she has built with these women, it's been critical for her business.
Well, yeah, reward programs, I mean, there's a reason why they've been replicated all over the country.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, so some of that type of stuff. It's interesting. It takes a little bit more effort, and I suppose that's the difference, right? Who's going to take the time and have the effort, and who's going to say, well, maybe next week. And you do that.
Mm-hmm.
The regulatory issues. Clothing probably doesn't have an awful lot of, you know, as long as you're buying it legally.
Yeah.
In the booze industry, I would suspect that you guys are as regulated or close to the same way that we are in broadcasting.
Yeah.
Did that come in as a kind of a cold slap on the face? Or was that something you had anticipated?
After having the family be involved in the fuel and oil business for so many years, it wasn't as bad as that. So it was, I expected it. I expected interaction with ABC, with you know, ATF, that kind of thing, and.
Not the firearms part, the tobacco part.
That's
yeah. Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. That interaction, yeah, with the it wasn't as daunting as I had expected. So it was. They did a background check. They come and check the place out. You know, they'll send in secret shoppers to make sure that the
underage things or people buying buy for other
And, I mean, as long as we're following the laws, which we are, it's not nearly as crazy as I would have expected. It actually was, I don't have a criminal background, so it made it very easy.
So. It's surprising how much time it takes. Just a little nibble here, a little nibble there. At the end of the year, you look back and go, geez, it was like 30 hours.
Oh, yeah.
The year. You're right. I mean, you went in normal. I went in, I mean, this is all that I know. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, yeah. So that's what was expected.
Yeah.
Then you find out from other people what they don't have to do.
Right.
It's like, really?
Yeah. You don't have to have 7 different licenses pinned to your wall?
Yeah. Or you can just hire somebody. Mm-hmm. You don't have to go through a full EEO process.
Mm-hmm. And
how refreshing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think each industry probably has its own niche. Good thing we're not in the banking industry, huh?
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So when somebody comes in, one of the things that we talk about is you have a level of expectation. That's your 100%, mm-hmm. right? So if you have an experience that's a wow, maybe it's 120%. So they're 20% more likely to come back.
Mm-hmm.
Your marketing is 20% more effective, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And if they have 100% expectation, they come in at 80, well, that's 20% less likely to come in. Your marketing is 20% less apt to occur and be successful. How do you manage customer expectations?
That's been very interesting. Both between the two stores, Ferndale has a different mixture, obviously, than Eureka. In Ferndale, we do get this mixture, and this year has been a little different because of the pandemic, of course. But Ferndale, we would get, especially in the summertime, a large number of tourists in the summertime, and locals the rest of the time. In Eureka, it's mostly, it's a neighborhood market. So mostly we get folks from the neighborhood.
Or lost tourists.
Every once in a while, one of those. But managing that expectation, I feel like what I've tried to do is I want to give everybody a great experience. But I know that that's not 100% possible. I know that something's going to happen. I know that one person is going to come in every now and then that's just having a bad day. And no matter what we do, it's not going to be good enough. Knowing that, having that there is going to be, there's always going to be some kind of point of failure. I think that what we can do is we can plan for that, and we can really work as hard as we can to try to avoid that at all costs. Give that person the best experience they can get at all costs. But
you strive for it, but you never achieve perfection.
Yeah.
Yeah. There was a study I saw a couple of decades ago. Yeah. Okay. A couple of years ago. Hey, it's an age thing. Don't worry, you guys will get there. Frito-Lay.
Mm-hmm.
Their goal, every once in a while you get a burnt Frito chip, right? How'd that make it? Their level of perfection is acceptable is 99.97%. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's pretty high.
To get that last little bit becomes so cost prohibitive that they can't. And that, I think, is something that's tough for all of us. We all want to be the best we can. But to get to that level, at what point do you go, okay, that's it? When do you tell a specific individual, okay, we're just not going to be able to satisfy you?
Right.
And you suggest that they go somewhere else with a recommendation, a smile on your face, and all that stuff.
Right.
Or you're trying to get that product, whatever that one thing is, from, let's say, somewhere in upstate New York.
Yeah,
and you just can't bring it in at a price point that is possible. Just can't do it. Those types of things. It's tough to back off those because you do want to do that stuff. Ordering new product or sampling new. Lisa, you probably do it all the time. No big deal. Okay, fine. Let's take a run. We'll put it over on the show on the rack over there. Knock your socks off. Let's see if it sells.
Yeah, my store is easy.
Yeah.
Okay. A lot easier.
When you've got shelf space that's probably a little bit more limited than retail space, how do you test drive a new product to see what is that determination process of going from exposure, going, oh, that's interesting, to let's try it out, and then trying to figure out a safe price point,
mm-hmm.
and then making the determination it's either a go or it's a no?
So I kind of do two different things with that. There's the one side of it is customer recommendation. If I get enough customers that are like, oh, this is a fantastic product, you got to bring it in, this is the best whiskey I've ever had. If I get one or two of those, you know what? Okay, I'll give it a shot. Well, let's see if we can make it work. The other thing that I do is I do get in samples, and they're little sample bottles, and I
like the airplanes.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And I'll. My dad and I, frankly, will sit around the kitchen countertop.
A little market research, huh?
That's right. We'll taste them at home. I've also had, and it's made for some interesting work days. I have had some salespeople come in like 8 in the morning before the store even opens. And here, you should try this. It's 8 in the morning. You want me to, okay, all right, let's go ahead and give it, yeah, we'll try it out. So there is that. I mean, a lot of it is my personal taste. A lot of it is, you know, the customer's personal taste. And then we'll try it out. Every once in a while, we'll hit a grand slam. And then there are other times where we'll bring something in and it is just a dog. It will not move from that shelf. It doesn't matter if I personally recommend it.
You crash
and
burn.
Sell it.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just happens.
Yeah.
You
put it in the spaghetti sauce.
Yeah, that's right. Yes.
Yeah.
And then it comes
and
home.
It comes home.
And that's what we, you know, we drink at home.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
See if the roses like it too. Huh?
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, will you guys go on road trips? I know that there are buying shows for certain industries. I've never heard one for beverage industry. There must be, and I'm sure it's focusing on running businesses. But will you guys hit the road and go north and stop in at clothing stores, stop in at liquor shops, and just kind of walk around and try to find an idea?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. When I first bought the store, I think Cameron was more excited about going into anywhere we went. We had to go into this boutique. Oh, listen, we got to check out that boutique, you know, see how they're displaying things, what products they had. And then, right now he's already was trying to plan a trip down near Monterey. There's a couple wineries down there he wanted to check out and explore and see what they had.
Which makes sense, because if you rely only on the sales rep, okay, everybody gets exposed to that versus finding that niche item that you were referencing earlier that doesn't go home.
So, side note here, but it's also along the same thread. Lisa grew up in Ukiah, and she had a pretty fair exposure to some great wine culture in Mendocino County. So as we were dating, we were spending some time in Mendocino County and got to taste. I think that I probably gained the majority of my wine knowledge in the last 10 years, 8 years that we've known each other because of that time down there. We'd take a weekend and we'd hit, we'd do a few tastings, try a couple of things. We'd go down to Sonoma, we'd do some stuff in Mendocino, and I think we need to get back into that and do more of that again. It's been a while since we've done that, you know?
Yes, it has.
I've got a buddy who lives in Lynchburg.
Oh boy, yeah.
And it's interesting hearing the dynamics that what they have experienced as people go through the various tours.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the whiskey stops, and you've got the bourbon stops, and you got this stop and that stop. It seems like this is a very trendy thing now. I wonder how that is reflecting into the retail setting anymore, or if these are the clubs and they just buy that way rather than you guys doing a little summary. Okay, we went to this winery, da-da-da-da-da. Mm-hmm. Here are the two that they said were the best that we concur. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of like renter's picks or something like that. And you have those. If there's an interest for that kind of thing, I would suspect that there is.
There is for sure. Because that's something else we have also seen. Because of Facebook, because of the social media platforms, it's changed the dynamic in the way that people take recommendations and the way that they drink too. The bourbon right now is really, really hot.
Yeah, just smoking.
the Pappy Van Winkles, the Wellers, the Blanton's products, and it's hard to get them. If you get them in, you know, I basically...
Well, particularly if they're craft, and so the runs are really limited.
Small.
That's part of the mystique, I think, is that it's so limited that you kind of have bragging rights. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I got two bottles.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not going to work for you.
Right.
Here's the one, you know, like when Opus was out 20 years ago, and it was like $150 a bottle, and you would get eight in your store.
Yeah.
And you knew who to call, and they would soon be one
left
in the store. Yeah. I mean, that's, you're right. That's changed the dynamics of retail, certainly.
Yeah. And the social media platform has completely changed the way people buy, because you can have somebody in Georgia giving a recommendation to somebody in Humboldt County or in Tennessee, or, you know, it's closed those distances. And so it definitely has changed the way that people buy. And it's been harder as a retailer to try to get that product, especially, you know, we're a long way from Kentucky. So to get some of these whiskeys that are just really popular right now, it is hard to get them.
You almost need to have a buyer, you know, to do some kind of a trade, if you will. Yeah, I'll send you.
Yeah.
If you send me, and
it's interesting too. Lisa and I actually just had this conversation about, okay, how can we start doing this better? For example, there's some great French wines out there. And to be able to pull these...
You're not saying road trip, just automatically. What's going on here?
I mean, and they're these little boutique wineries. And to get these products imported, you know, if they could get into the States, they would just... I mean, they'd be phenomenally... They're phenomenal wines. They would just sell... They would sell well. So actually, it's funny. We have just started having a conversation. How the heck can we figure out how to import some of these? And then use the trip as an excuse to go out and have a good time.
Yeah, buying
see trip. The world a little bit.
Well, and part of it, and I think, you know, if there's a network, great, you can rely on it, is if everybody's going left, a lot of times I like to go right.
Yeah.
So if everybody's going to Europe, what about Australia?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of exploded. It's not a super secret, but it works for the example. And find those, or the New Zealand ones that are just super narrow, that everybody else is looking over here and you're picking up all this wonderful stuff. Because you know the big boys won't.
Right.
Because they have to buy the train load. Mm-hmm. They are not just buying for two outlets. They're buying for 2,000 outlets.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of stuff, I think, keeps the excitement going for the biz, too. Give it 10 years. Keeps the excitement going for the biz.
Something else that's been interesting for me is watching the trends in wines. What varietals are selling well, and then what ones die off. For example, Merlot, not that long ago, was hot. Really hot.
That was it.
That was what everybody wanted.
That and Chardonnay, right?
Yeah. Now that's kind of dropped off. Now people are picking up Malbecs or Barberas, or, you know, something a little bit different. Now, of course... The old staples, you know, the Chardonnays and the Cabernet Sauvignons, they're always going to stay. I shouldn't say always.
Well, they're traditional.
Yeah.
They're going to always. Ones.
Yeah, they're going to sell well.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see. Yeah, the Pinot Noirs have picked up. And in fact, that's what we've been drinking at home lately.
Well, stupid, right? Do you guys track who buys what?
No.
Okay.
I kind of take mental notes. I take mental notes, but I don't actually track who's buying what. Not at this time.
We made the mistake of not grabbing the label off the bottle. Right now, this goes back 37 years ago, right?
Mm-hmm.
There was Honeymoon, Gold Beach, and we had a dry Gewürztraminer, which is, you know, doesn't exist, right? I mean, a sweet wine can't be dry.
Right.
This one was, and grassy. I mean, it was just like, yeah, didn't keep the label. I've been searching now for 37 years for a dry giver. Have no idea other than it was an Oregon winery. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure it doesn't exist now because it's, you know, white and it's, you know, almost four decades later. But the tracking of that kind of stuff. I mean, if you're into it, you have your little travel log and you know what's going on and you make your notes and all that kind of stuff. But for the casual, that's just kind of looking for something nice tonight, which ones? Ange likes Rieslings. Okay. And we've had the high price stuff. And the roses get it. I mean, we won't eat, we won't suffer the way you guys are willing to. Don't have that much, so we want it to be a positive. And it doesn't tend to be priced on, or based on price.
Right.
And that, I think, is one of the goofy things that new people have.
Yeah.
Is they think the higher the price, the better the experience.
Not always.
No, we like a dry champagne. Yeah. Don't give me the fancy stuff, because that's sweet.
Mm-hmm.
No, just dry and clean. Boom.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was wondering, if you do profiling for folks, or if you would track that kind of thing so that you know what people want.
I have actually just recently purchased a system so that I can do that. It's just now list of priorities.
Well, yeah, and like in the clothing, you know, the old Shirt of the Month Club. I mean, it's the same concept, right? You get to a point where you know what your customer wants, how often they want it, how much they're willing to spend, you program it in, and now half of your shipment is pre-sold.
Yeah.
So what's on the shelf is all profit.
Yeah.
You know, there's got to be a fallacy in that, because nobody's doing it. But it seems, you know, from the outside to the window looking in, it seems like it would be a pretty easy thing to accomplish, to be able to keep things rolling and try some of those new things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Another thing that's interesting to me about the booze business is wine 1 year can be phenomenal, and the next, it can be terrible. It doesn't seem to be as much the case in the liquor side. It seems like liquor can be a little more consistent, but in the wine side, it is amazing how 1 year's grapes can just change a flavor profile entirely from 1 year to the next.
Even with the same percentage of the grapes?
Yes.
The rain?
Yes.
The harvest time? Mm-hmm. I mean, all
were
that
there
kind
fires?
Of stuff.
Were there, what kind of humidity was there that year?
I suppose that's part of the art, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the exploration and what people enjoy is trying that and see what this is like versus less. Now, the aging is another element that's there, that a lot of folks will buy red, okay, stick it on the shelf for 30 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You don't see that too much in the retail setting, though.
No.
Okay, I'd like to buy a case of red wine, pick your species, so to speak, but I want it to be 20 years old. I want something from last century. Okay, it's a bit of a scramble.
Yeah. It is.
Are there some that do that, though? Either with the higher end, or those that come out and they say, this is really going to really mellow in 25 years, and you buy one case and you keep it on the shelf, and then start rotating those things down the line?
Locally, I see that more with port wines than any other varietal. I do get people that intentionally come in, I want a vintage port, I want to age it, because I want to open this, you know, 25 years from now for my anniversary or something to that effect. But I think we as Americans, and as a general statement, we like to pop and pour. Let's drink this thing now. You know, I don't want to wait 20 years. So I do see a lot of that. There are some people with patience. Yeah, they're out there, but it's not. I know I'm not one of them. So I want to see if this thing's good now. But yeah, we do get... We do get a handful of varietals in that are intentionally made so that the peak of the fruit is later. You should put it up on the shelf. You should not pop it for another 20 to 30 years. There are definitely wines in the store like that. We just don't get a lot of that around here, where people are willing to...
A lot of demand.
Yeah.
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 What about cases? Is it easier to buy cases of wine and go all or nothing?
For the consumer or for the...
For the consumer or for you. Mm-hmm. Okay. I've got this. Here's the recommendation. You're looking at it. Okay. 10 cases, a truckload. Give me one case so I can break it out.
Yeah.
We can sell it by the bottle rather than by the case. I mean, how do you make that determination which option you're going to go with, yeah. or do you just go with both?
I go with both. But I will say this. I prefer to sell cases. If there is definitely a volume discount in the liquor wine business. So if I...
For you or for me?
For both. Now, that's not always the case, but at my store, if somebody comes in and buys a case of wine, I give them a 10% discount. It gives me the ability to turn more volume. And by turning more volume, I'm able to buy more product, which gets me to a better price point. So there are times where I do go out and I'll take a risk. I've got a heap of wine in the back of the store at Harrison K right now. It was a big risk. You know, I'm going to buy 30 cases of wine. I'm going to store it in the back. I think I can turn this, you know, in 6 months, maybe a year.
Keep the door locked.
Keep the door locked. so that I am able to get a price point that is competitive with those big box stores. I definitely have a few staple products that I do that for sure, because they do sell. They sell well.
Now, most liquor stores also have got the sodas and the chips and the convenience store side of the equation.
Yeah.
How do you determine the square footage ratios?
In this case, with my stores, I didn't have to do that. I just kind of adopted the existing platform that the Pastores had done, that the Grenzels had done in Ferndale, and for all intents and purposes, just adopted their model. Now, since I've taken over, I have been able to realize, okay, maybe we need more square footage for one product or another. And we have put the squeeze on some things and then increased others. But it is a lot of heart, a lot of, I think that we need more of this because it seems to be selling more. Yeah, a lot more gut.
Intuition.
And intuition, yeah, yep. Yeah.
Soon that'll be replaced by experience, but
yeah.
Gut, yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things I think a lot of people are intrigued by is how high do you go? When I go into a grocery store, I enjoy looking at the top shelf. Yeah. Obviously, it's eye level for me, but that's where all the cool stuff is.
Yeah.
You know, the high-selling stuff is 3 to 5. The cool stuff is up on 6 or down on 1, you know, counting our shelves going up. A lot of convenience stores don't have the height because of security issues.
Yes.
Makes a lot of sense. But how do you determine placement? There are all kinds of stories talking about placement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so there is a legitimate science to placement of product. So my suppliers actually want their products in certain places based on price, based on profitability.
Yeah, they want the sweet spot.
Yes, they do.
I mean, everybody does, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to hit it off the handle. You want to hit it off the sweet spot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So truly, it really is low profitability products are at the bottom. Higher profitability goes to the top. Now, determining like how high of a shelf you want that shelf to be, in my case, with the store, it's really about being able to see what's going on in the store, because it really is a situation where there's typically only two people working at the store at a given time, myself and or a clerk. And so, we want to be able to see what's going on in the store and be able to help people out if they need it, if they look like they're struggling. We want to be able to go talk to them.
Yeah, service is one side, obviously.
Yes.
Shrinkage is the downside, yeah.
But, it is entirely, there is a science behind placement, 100%. For example.
Getting better at that?
Oh, yeah. And every once in a while, I'll do an experiment. I'll put one product in a certain place. Okay, it's not selling well. How about if I just move it to another place entirely? Let's see what happens. And sometimes it goes. Other times, okay, maybe people just don't like this particular
item. It's going home.
Yeah, we're going to have a party at the renter house.
Yeah. So. Well, Lisa, I'm sure the same thing in the clothing store, too. You know, you put it in the front where everybody sees it versus you put it in the back because you think it's going to be a destination buy. Sometimes you hit a home run and sometimes you pop out.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's nodding your head, folks.
Yeah, that's right. You're on the radio. Yeah.
Sorry.
That's all right. We covered nicely for you.
Thank you.
If somebody hasn't been into the stores,
yes,
what should they experience? What should they expect?
They should, when they come in, they will be greeted. They should expect to feel like they're a part of a family. They should expect a clean atmosphere. Both stores are an older atmosphere. Both stores have a certain type of product that you're not going to be able to find in other places. For example, I see it especially in Ferndale, where there are people of Danish descent, Portuguese descent, Swiss descent, Italian descent. And each one of those groups has a tradition that they like to participate in. So we've got ouzo on the shelf for the Greeks. We've got Goldschlager on the shelf for the Swiss. We've got the aquavit for the Danes. And that's something that I pride myself on, is I am of Swiss descent. The Swiss are very neutral, so they should be able to have a neutral experience in the store. So I don't know if that's a real positive way of putting
it. You stayed away from bland. That's a good job.
Yeah, we're not going to be bland.
Yeah.
But they should come in and feel like they're part of the family. They should come in and be able to have a conversation with myself or whoever's working there, and feel comfortable. And if they don't feel comfortable, well, that's part of a family too. Sometimes things happen in a family, but you know what? Hey, we're willing to make up, we're willing to work through it, and we're willing to do what we can to have a great experience, to have a great family.
Last question, special orders.
Yes.
Brought up some of the ethnic areas of interest.
Yes.
Are they encouraged? Are they possible? Would you go to the mat to try to find something? How do I know what I can ask for?
Yes.
How do you know that it's possible so you cannot build expectations up in me and then say, tried, couldn't find?
Right. So special orders are absolutely encouraged. If somebody is looking for a product, I will go to the mat to try to find that. Now, it doesn't mean I am able to get them every time. There are circumstances where I've had people ask me for a whiskey from back east, and they are simply not large enough to even have the ATF clearance, so to speak, to even cross state lines, those kinds of things. I've even personally been trying to get a certain champagne from France, that same deal. I'm not able to even get it into the country at this point in time. So there are times when it's just simply not possible unless you physically go to that location and buy it personally. But that said, I absolutely encourage it, because a lot of times somebody will come in, if somebody has enough passion to come in and actually have a conversation with me about bringing in a particular wine or spirit, then they're not going to be the only one. And other people are going to want to enjoy that product as well. So if somebody's willing to come in and ask for that, and they've got the passion behind that, then okay, I'll find this for you. If I can't find it, I'll be up front, I'll communicate with you, I'll let you know what's going on. And there are those times. But most of the time, I have found myself being pretty successful. And I'm very willing to do it. And if they take a case, I still give them a percentage discount on whatever that would be. So.
Communication.
Yeah.
It's amazing how often it just boils down to communication.
Yeah, yeah.
And you'll stay up till 2 a.m. in the morning looking for it, too.
Yeah. We've had a few of those nights where Lisa is like, what are you doing? Well, I'm getting ready to call back to Italy right now to find out if I can get my hands on a particular item. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, that time zone thing is kind of challenging, isn't it? Oh, this was fun. Thanks for coming in, guys.
Thank you.